Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Get your free book and talk to a specialist to discover this little-known strategy to get potential double-digit growth during good years and never lose in the market crashes. Call 800-516-9191 to discover this asset that people like Walt Disney and JCPenney use to grow wealthy. Plus, when you call right now, you get free shipping and handling, no credit card required. And I'll send you a free copy of the audiobook so you can listen in your car.
Call 800-516-9191. 800-516-9191. That's 1-800-516-9191.
This is a special edition on 102.3 KRMG, Tulsa's news and talk. The KRMG Morning News 8 a.m. in-depth hour starts now.
Our top story on the KRMG Morning News with Dan Potter. We're welcoming former Tulsa Police Chief Chuck Jordan to our KRMG in-depth hour today as we look at his long career serving the city.
KRMG goes in-depth.
KRMG Managing Editor Rick Corey.
It was early December when Chuck Jordan made his announcement.
As of February 1st, I'm going to be retiring from the Tulsa Police Department the second time. I want to stress, for starters, it's not about health issues. It's certainly not about my dissatisfaction with the mayor's office. This mayor has been outstanding, very supportive of me and my police department.
KRMG immediately reached out to Mayor G.T. Bynum for his response. He told us he's not just pleased with the job Chuck Jordan has done. He's amazed at some of the things he's had to deal with.
Coming in when we had just gone through a layoff of over 130 police officers, I think that's probably the largest layoff in the history of the Tulsa Police Department. That's the week that Chief Jordan started. In the midst of the Great Recession, going through very high-profile criminal events that were successfully dealt with by the Tulsa Police Department and internal challenges dealt with by the police department.
You heard Jordan say retire for the second time. He joined the department in 1969, but retired briefly to command civilian officers in Kosovo. He rejoined the department and was appointed interim chief by Mayor Dewey Bartlett, then took that role permanently. On January 22nd, that position was filled when Mayor G.T. Bynum picked Wendell Franklin to be the new chief. I'm Rick Corey with former Chief Jordan here with us in the studio. It's your opportunity to download or open the KRMG app and leave us your messages for him using the open mic.
Issues that matter to you. Expanded. On the KRMG Morning News 8 a.m. in-depth hour.
And Chief Jordan is sitting to my right, Rick Corey to my left, and let's begin the exit interview. But I got to go. Chief, welcome back to the KRMG Morning News.
Thank
good
you,
to have
Dan,
you here.
Very much.
The past 3 days, have they been, you know, has it been kind of a shock to the system going from 100 to nothing to, you know, down to zero?
No, I spent most of my time with with family, and it's really been very pleasant. It's just been real easy going, and haven't really worried about anything going on any place except my house and my family.
Do you miss being informed? I mean, you woke up to texts in the middle of the night. You knew what was going on when you got up in the morning.
I do. That's always, you know, I'm sure that's always going to be that way.
Yeah.
You know, I do miss I miss knowing what's going on. But, you know, that's you guys in the news cover it pretty well. I can find out pretty quick what happened.
Well, there's a ringing endorsement. I appreciate
yeah,
that.
How about that? Now, I asked you earlier if the car seemed quiet. You guys drive around. People don't realize you drive around with that police radio on all the time. That's got to be bizarre having that silence as you drive around.
Well, I do. But, you know, I don't have a police car anymore. And I do have a my personal car. I've got XM Sirius, and I listen to a lot of 60s, 70s, and blues, so I'm happy.
What is this Sirius XM of which you speak? I've never heard of that before. I don't know what you're talking
about. It's a thing.
It's a thing. It's a thing.
Not here.
Well, Rick mentioned in that package there that you took over this department at a time when I don't know if any person in their right mind would have. 130 officers laid off. A corruption investigation was ongoing. Why on earth, Chuck, did you take the chief's job in 2010?
You know, I've told everybody that I wouldn't have taken a chief's job anywhere else. I made sergeant here in 1979. I never took another promotional exam. I like being the street-level sergeant. I like being the squad-level supervisor. Had no desire for command. And I kind of found out I liked it when I was in Kosovo. I was able to do things that I thought needed to be changed. You can actually do it from a command level.
Hmm.
But this is where I grew up. This is where my friends are. This is where the people I care about are. And that kind of pushed me a little more towards taking that job when the interim was offered.
Do you remember back then what you thought you could accomplish by taking the chief's job?
I knew with the people in this police department we could accomplish anything. This is leadership's part of the puzzle. Followers are the most important part of the puzzle.
You had to feel like you were coming into the job with one arm tied behind your back, though, with 130 officers laid off.
It was tough. We got way behind on community policing. We got way behind on a lot of just a lot of projects that we needed to be doing. We just didn't have the people to do it. And we did it. We were going from call to call to call. You know, officers were literally spending in excess 85% of their time on calls, and they should be spending 40% of their time on calls by all the studies. So but we're getting there. You know, we're now getting.
I was going to ask you. So you say that in the present tense, we're getting there. You never quite got where you wanted to be in those 10 years.
Well, no, but I think under Chief Franklin, we will.
Yeah,
the police department will. It's hard to go out and recruit that many people that quickly.
Sure.
And to put them through academies. You know, so it's like I say, we are getting there. It's a slow process, but we're adding on and adding on and adding on.
You talked about that community policing, but you mentioned when you first announced your retirement and several times since that trust was a huge issue, and that was one of the things you wanted to get back, and the community policing is a big part of that. How do you see rebuilding that, Chuck, outside that trust? Is it just performance, more guys? How do you do it?
Well, I think, you know, that trust is very much a one-on-one situation. I mean, I could get up in front of audiences all day long and talk, and that's not going to build trust in our community. That's going to make that group of people be happy with what I said, maybe. Mm-hmm. What's really going to build trust in our community is individual officers talking to the neighbors, talking to the people in their beat, citywide, and that's going to start building trust. When you know somebody as part of an organization that you know, and you know what sports team they like, and you know what their kids' names are, and that's the kind of thing that builds trust, those kind of personal relationships.
How close do you think we are to the, you know, the best model of that kind of policing? Do you think we have a long way to go to get there?
I think we know what the model is. I think we're going to have to staff that model. Our community resource officers, what we've seen down in the 61st and Peoria area, what we're getting ready to see now up 56th Street North and Martin Luther King area, you know, those are things that are very successful. It's just a matter of now getting them staffed. And again, we're just now catching up and we're starting to have enough people to do that.
When you named Popsy Floyd to do some of that, was that because you'd seen that done other places, or was that just, here's how we want to start this? Because he did have an impact, didn't he?
Oh, he had a huge impact. And it was a lot of that is who selected to do it. And he stepped forward and wanted to do it. And we managed to get a grant, which was very helpful. They saw, the federal government saw what this could do. And that's going to be a model for our other community resource officers, what Popsy did and what later Donnie Johnson did and what we're seeing going on with Leland Ashley and the folks up north right now.
What do you think of the choice of Wendell Franklin, Major Franklin, as the next chief?
I think he's going to carry our department into the future very, very, very well. He's a good man. He's got a great moral compass. He's got a great work ethic. He's a visionary. He's very data driven. He understands technology better than his former chief did. I can work my iPhone. That's about I understood a lot of the data we were dealing with, but not to the level he does. He's going to be very much, data driven. He's going to be really good for our police department.
What structurally changed in the 10 years that you were chief that you're proud of? I mean, CompStat meetings, data-driven policing, community involvement. What one thing do you think stands out?
We stopped doing CompStat. CompStat
right.
Turned out it wasn't being attended by the public. It turned out to be a dog and pony show that my majors would spend a week getting ready for. And it was almost a competition between majors to see who can put on the best CompStat. What we did was start using our analysts more efficiently and spreading them out across the city, and they could inform me what was going on. So I think that was very, very good. I think we've certainly let our detective division, the separate units, be as proactive as they want to be. I can remember a time when you didn't see task forces started by detective units. That was started by somebody in patrol, or you didn't see guys that worked day shift detective out at night in the middle of the night trying to catch burglars. And now they are so proactive, it's really paying off for us to see what our investigators are doing.
You and Tulsa World, I've got to admit, did a really good Q&A with you in the last week or so. And in that, you talk about Tulsa being an extremely violent city, maybe more violent than any – I don't want to compare it to other cities, but just a violent city. What do you think is behind that? And you note in the Tulsa World piece that it's not just gun violence. It's all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, and what I said was that that was the one thing that concerned me the most about our city. You compare us to other cities, you know, we're kind of at the norm probably.
Okay.
To be quite honest with you, you know, we're called the most dangerous city several times over the past couple decades, and that also includes traffic wrecks. So it's not the typical crime that you think of. My concern probably the most is about, without a doubt, is domestic violence. Why we kind of beat our head against the wall trying to figure out why are we worse than anybody else? Is it a Bible Belt thing? Is it a meth thing? Is it a, you know, we haven't come up with a good answer yet as to why we see so much more domestic violence in Tulsa than we do in most, or in Oklahoma than we do in most states.
It's a hard problem to study and get your arms around, I'm sure.
It is, and it's a hard one to, you know, it's all about education. If we can get people who are victims of domestic violence to go to our family safety center, they'll survive it. We have nobody, we've never had anybody come to the family safety center that was a homicide victim after they went. You know, we get them through the process. We get them into to safe places. We get them through counseling, you know, all the things that they need to make it through that.
You know, speaking, you mentioned task force. You were one of the first SOT guys, one of the first members of that a long time ago. We've got to ask about some of those situations and what made you want to get into that. I know you'd had some experience, obviously, overseas. Did that help?
You know, there's a military component to the SWAT team, but it's not it's a different – a different mindset for sure. You're not going at it with the idea of combat. You're going at it with the idea of resolving a situation without combat, if possible. And it was you know, it's changed so much over the years. But it was we were having situations where officers on their own were sometimes negotiating with people. Sometimes there would be an armed and barricaded suspect that there was no SWAT team, just a bunch of patrol guys got, you know, held this guy in a situation, talked to him, got him out, or went in and got him. And, you know, it does take what the name implies. It does take special weapons and tactics to perform a lot of those functions.
We spoke with one person about Chief Jordan's retirement, and he said, you know, Chuck's 7-0. We'll explain what 7-0 means in just a moment.
102.3 KRMG, Tulsa's news and talk, where we tell you the three big things you need to know every 15 minutes, all day. Now, back to the KRMG Morning News, 8 a.m. in-depth hour.
Think about the things our police department has dealt with during the time that he's been chief, coming in when we had just gone through a layoff of over 130 police officers. That's the week Chief Jordan started. In the midst of the Great Recession, going through very high-profile criminal events that were successfully dealt with by the Tulsa Police Department and internal challenges that have been dealt with by the police department.
Chuck Jordan is our guest for this 8 a.m. in-depth hour. He's in the studio with us. We've been joking that it's his exit interview, but we really wanted to spend an hour with him now that he has retired as Tulsa Police Chief after 10 years of service. Service has been your life, hasn't it? I mean, how did you get in the Navy at 17?
My dad would not sign for me to go in the Marine Corps.
Okay.
I graduated from high school at 17.
Oh, okay.
And he said, I will not sign for you to go in the Marine Corps, but I will sign for you to go in the Navy or the Air Force, either one. So I chose Naval Air, ended up being temporary duty with the Marine Corps most of my tour, so... Take that, Dad. But, that was a time in 1965 when that's what everybody did. You either went to college or you went in the military.
But it set the tone, I think, for the rest of your life. When you got back from Vietnam, I know that your father was an Indiana State Trooper. He was a federal agent at one point. So, you know, a son following his father into law enforcement, not that unusual. But it wasn't really something that you wanted when you were a teenager, was it?
Not necessarily, no. You know, it really struck me when I came back. I was very disheartened by what was going on in our country and the way as far as riots were going and dissatisfaction with the government and trust. And my thoughts on it were that the only, you know, the average representative government most people can approach and have access to is a police officer. Hmm. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I can do a little bit to change this.
As a police officer, as I said before the break, you were, somebody informed us, you were 7-0. He was talking about shootouts, right?
Yeah, I think he was. Yes, sir.
There are officers who go their entire career never pulling their weapon if they're fortunate. You had to at least 7 times and walked away unscathed each time.
I did, and you know, there's a reason. There's some good reasons for that. Hopefully, one of them is that I was active and I was looking for bad guys. I also came to realize that maybe my tactics weren't good, and I gave people opportunities to pull guns and shoot that, you know, I should have just maybe held back a little bit, waited for backers, used cover better, a lot of things. It was a learning experience for me because I seriously sat down after one of my shootings and thought, why on earth am I getting in all these? And I realized that part of it was my poor tactics.
What did you change?
I just changed the way I did business. I changed the way I didn't expose myself. I didn't necessarily confront somebody till I had plenty of backers. I made it to where, obviously, if someone's going to try to pull a gun on you, they think they can win. So you try to do everything you can do to make the situation where there's no conceivable way they can win, and maybe they won't pull that gun.
That's got to be a message you passed on to your officers, too.
I have. Absolutely have.
You spent some time undercover, didn't you?
I did.
There's a quote in the Tulsa World article about you actually drove an armed robber to an armed robbery once.
I did. I got
Tell
to
us
do
that story.
Well, I was working. We were working a little bit of drugs and some biker stuff. And this was a group, a man and a woman that were hitting. They'd hit several places, motels. They'd hit several restaurants. And we were trying to figure out who they were. And we got, believe it or not, a call like at 6 o'clock in the morning, woke me up. The dispatcher saying some woman just called down here and said she wanted to know if her husband was in jail for robbing the Subway. So, I used to be a detective, so I immediately thought this is a clue, and we looked who this guy up, and he matched, and the two of them kind of matched physical descriptions. So we sat on their apartment complex for a whole week watching them walk around their complex. We thought initially they were just looking for dope, and then it suddenly hit me. They're wanting a car. They don't have any cars. We had different car descriptions in every robbery. So the next day I ultimately went there and I saw a lady sitting downstairs in a lawn chair from where this guy lived. And I thought, So I went and grabbed a six pack of beer real quick and offered her a beer and talked to her, sat and talked to this lady for a while. And before it's over with, he comes home and offered him a beer and he invites me up to his apartment and we drank some beers. And before you know it, he orders up a crack rock, and I told him I'd just gotten out of prison in Indiana, and I'll do some meth later. Don't want any part of crack. And once he did that, he was ready to do anything. He started getting on the phone and calling places to see what was open and what was closed and how late. And they decided to hit a Subway, and we had I had an FBI agent assigned to my unit and to help us and. He went undercover and played sandwich artist, and I drove this guy and his wife to a Subway.
Drove
and,
him right into his arrest.
Yeah, so it was funny.
It's a great story.
What was the look on his face when he found out you were a cop?
Well, that's interesting because I had him pull me out of the car because I didn't want to get inside the car shootout with her or anything else. So they pulled me out of the car and I put my hands behind my back and laid on the grass like I was handcuffed. And one of my officers, being a smart aleck, came up and says, yeah, this armed robbery stuff's fun, isn't it? And I made some crude remark. and I finally said, I don't know anything about it. I just gave them a ride. Well, this guy's walking by, the robber, and he goes, he knew all about it. He knew everything. And I thought, oh, yeah, okay. I took my hands out, pulled my badge out from under my shirt and said, yeah, I sure did. And he just, you know, he's shocked, and he's walking to the car, shaking his head. So he says, let me get this straight. A cop drove me to rob an FBI agent? Yep, pretty much.
Love that story.
KRMG goes in depth.
It's KRMG Managing Editor Rick Corey.
Jordan's career with the department began in 1969. He served 32 years before retiring briefly to be a regional commander in Kosovo. He came back and in 2010 was named interim chief and then full-time chief by Mayor Dewey Bartlett, someone he thanked during his retirement announcement.
I want to thank Mayor Bartlett for appointing me. I want to thank G.T. Bynum for retaining me. I want to thank all of my police officers for allowing me to be their leader. And I want to thank the citizens of Tulsa.
And that which does manage to melt.
When asked about his proudest moments, he talked about some of Tulsa's most difficult moments, including the April 6, 2012 Good Friday shootings. 5 people had been shot. 3 of them died. Within 48 hours, Jordan's officers had arrested Alvin Lee Watts and Jacob Carl England.
These guys were passionate about this. They were offended by this. They had the "this isn't going to happen in my town" mentality, and that's exactly what I wanted to see.
Current Mayor G.T. Bynum points to some of the challenges Jordan faced as chief and where the department is now as he leaves.
Here we are now with a police department where every officer in the field has a body-worn camera. All of our officers are going through implicit bias training, and Chief Jordan has been the steady hand at the helm through all of that.
And as is tradition, on January 31st, Chief Jordan made his final radio sign-off.
Bid my farewell to all the heroes from the Tulsa Police Department that I've had the honor to work with. Each of you, just remember why you're here. Watch your six. Take care of each other. Take care of our citizens. And God bless every one of you. Because I'm really, really going to miss you. Robert 1107.
I'm Rick Corey. The former chief is here for our KRMG In-Depth Hour. So download or open the KRMG app now and leave us your messages for him using the open mic.
KRMG goes in-depth.
Live PDC theme, I think, might be appropriate. Chief Chuck Jordan sitting to my right. Rick Corey is in the studio with me as well. Chief, what are you most proud of in your 10 years as chief? Is it, you know, restaffing the department? Is it ending the corruption? What is it?
You know, I think it's a little bit of all of it. There's no one thing I can point at. I'm just so proud of our officers. I mean, that's being chief, a lot of how you perform well is allowing the people that work for you to do what they do well.
Yeah.
And giving them the tools to do it. And we've got an amazing police department. You know, everyone was so worried about our millennials coming along that they were going to be a problem. They have been everything but a problem. You know, they want self-satisfaction. They are going to go out here. You'll see within a squad, they'll have their own little mini task force on a crime problem.
I love that.
You know, where back in my day, we'd have written a report and sent it to detectives. These kids are following up. They're writing search warrants. They're going, you know, I mean, this is we have an amazing bunch of police officers in this city. I hope everybody realizes that. And, you know, the old veterans, same thing. They're very good at what they do. It's, we're a lucky community. We've got a great police department.
During your tenure as chief, 2 men, as Rick pointed out in his piece there, 2 men went hunting human beings on Good Friday. You have pointed to that single case as being the one case maybe you're most proud of because of the work that your department put in on solving that and doing it within a matter of a couple of days.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I have a lot of faith in my department. I did then. I wouldn't have made the statement, "We're coming for you," publicly if I didn't know that that's exactly what we were going to be doing. That had so many ways of possibly going really, really wrong. You know, it could have been somebody traveling through. That's what scared me the most. They had somebody going down I-44 and decided to just get off the highway and go kill some people and then get back on the road and go. That would have been very difficult. We actually waited and started watching news west and east of us to see if there's any other incidents in other cities. But just to see our department mobilize the way it did, it was amazing.
I was there that morning. I was talking to Dan Miller in the street. I was one of the first people there, as a matter of fact. And you know, what was amazing to me, Chuck, was how calm your guys kept everything despite what had happened. I know it was early in the morning, but those neighborhoods were waking up. Those people were seeing those things, and they were able to keep that calm. What did they do to do that? And what led you so quickly to capture?
Well, it was help, you know, as far as keeping people calm, I think the officers realized immediately what the fear that was gripping our African-American community. I mean, people were being targeted because of their race. And I think our officers realized immediately that we had to let them know we're here. We're going after them. You know, we're going to do everything we can do to keep you safe. You know, why did it happen so fast? A lot of it was just information that came from our public. And that's always been the case in so many investigations that we get information from our public that leads us to the suspect.
Chief, I'm going to have you put on those headphones there. And Skylar, I don't know if you turned those down. Okay. There's a little volume knob. Turn this up because we're getting some open mics, people who have questions for you and comments as well.
I got to tell you guys, this is one of the best interviews I have ever heard. And I usually listen to all of your in-depth 8 o'clock stuff. And this guy's great. We are really going to miss him. I love his stories. He needs to write a book. He's great.
Thought about writing a book?
I've thought about it. You know, it's something you don't think about while you're in the middle of your career.
Yeah.
You know, and it's also when you're a police officer, you don't realize how you don't realize just how fantastic that is to the people on the outside. Some of the stuff that you get to do. So I'm thinking about it.
He's a great storyteller.
Oh yeah, he is. All right. Great. So other thing, what else would if you write a book right now? And I was telling you, make a couple of lists of things to do. What else would you put on it? You think?
What am I gonna do? Well, yeah. You know, I'm going to spend obviously time with my family. I would like to do some volunteer work. I've been talking to folks at the coffee bunker. You know, the men and women there, literally gave their everything that they could possibly give to their community and to their country, and we kind of owe it to them to make sure they can get back in our society successfully.
All right. So, if you were going to write a book. Like that lady suggested, what are a couple of other stories you might put in there?
Oh gosh, I mean, you know, it's there's been several SWAT cases that I would certainly want to talk about. A lot of it is just the day to day calls. I mean, you know, you saw it on Cops, you see it on Live PD, you see, it's so interesting to watch people. When they're in these situations, I'm not talking about when they're in trouble and when they're down and out. It's just there's a lot of really interesting stuff, good stuff, bad stuff, just the way people are.
I played this in high school jazz band.
Really?
The theme from Chips. Are you kidding me? Okay. 8:51 on the KRMG Morning News. Chief Chuck Jordan is with us for this 8 a.m. in-depth hour. Open mic about 1921 and the anniversary coming up, and I wanted to get your reaction to that.
Please ask Chief Jordan if he thinks that us talking about the 1921 race riot helps things, or does it just make things never heal?
That it's a comment that we hear a lot, that bringing this up and having the mass grave search and having the anniversary coming up is opening up a lot of old wounds. You think it's healthy to talk about it, or you think it's detrimental?
I think it's absolutely healthy. Look at how many people didn't even know about the race massacre in this community and across the country.
Yeah.
You know, it was a terrible event, and it's a part of our history, whether we like it or not.
You apologized on behalf of the Tulsa Police Department for police inaction or things that the police did on that day in 1921.
Absolutely. I mean,
why did you do that?
Because I wanted to let people know that's not going to happen today. We will always be there between any kind of violence or threat like that in your families today.
In the almost 100 years, you were the first police chief who had thought to do that.
Well, it became quite clear to me that I needed to, because I was wondering, why can't we recruit African Americans from Tulsa?
Hmm.
And finally, somebody said very candidly, "Well, it's because of 1921." And I went, "Well, that was almost 100 years ago." What? He said, "Yeah, but you know, this. My grandparents told me this happened on this corner, or this happened at this place." He said, "The stories have always been there," and you know, I said, "Well, that's you know," and said the mistrust for the police has followed with that. And, you know, it's not going to make it any better to hide it. You know, half of our community knows about it already. So let's make sure the other half knows too, to talk about it, and that's the only way we'll ever start healing.
I moved here in 2008, so that would have made me 46 when I moved to Tulsa. It wasn't until I moved to Tulsa that I had heard, and even then, I think it took a couple of years before I heard the stories.
I grew up here, and it wasn't taught in our schools. It wasn't taught as part of Oklahoma history or what happened here in Tulsa, never once.
A lot of respect for you, Chief. Seen you on First 48, Live PD, place like that. Think you did an awesome job. My question is, if there was a made-for-TV movie about you, who would you have play you?
Oh, who would play Chuck Jordan?
Boy, that's kind of like asking, what grade would you give yourself for the first year? I'm not sure. Obviously, John Wayne's dead, so I don't know who I'd go with. No, it's, you know, that's a hard one. I'd have to give that some thought, but I would hope it would be somebody that is better looking than I am and is probably smarter than I am.
You know, if he was still alive, James Garner would have been a good choice.
Yeah, that would have been a good choice.
He would have been.
That would have been. You're right. I mean, maybe you can get Ryan Reynolds to do it.
You know, if I'm looking for appeal for my wife, I mean, we'd, you know, I don't know. What's the guy on Blue Bloods?
Selleck.
Tom Selleck.
Yeah.
I think pretty much all the women in my age group kind of like him.
Rock that white mustache.
There you go.
That's it.
Thank you for doing this. We really appreciate it. And tomorrow when there's several inches of snow on the ground and you can roll back over and go back to sleep, know that we're envious of you in that ability.
Well, thank you guys for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Chief, thanks.
You bet.
You know, he said he's a former traffic guy. We could put him to work.
Yes, I think we might have a job for him. I don't know. Retired Tulsa Police Chief Chuck Jordan.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.